This podcast contains spoilers, swear words, and shit. It's really hard to keep thinking of S words.
It's a cop out.
All right, let's give some fucking advice.
Wait, I have one more question I want to ask before advice.
Oh, fine.
I don't have to ask it. Are you bored of this? Okay.
My God.
This is the last episode. You never have to do this again, Hannah. Yeah. God, you just tough it up for 15 more minutes.
This thing that you love doing with your friends.
For fuck's sake.
Just do it for two more minutes. Hello, and welcome to Bad Choices.
A podcast about a group of friends who are trying to become better people, but how are they doing it?
By watching a TV show
That's
and not
silly.
Actually doing anything.
What? I'm your host, a large goat who... who also protects your eyes from detritus, Billy Eyelash.
That's good. That's good.
And I'm an action star who lives in a river, Burt Marlin.
Yes! We are so good at this podcast.
Hang on, Burt Marlin? I don't
what?
Get it. I don't get it. Who's Burt? Who are you referencing? What pun is this?
Who's Burt Macklin?
Oh, Burt Macklin. Burt Macklin is the made-up character that Andy pretends to be
on
Parks
and Rec.
Oh, yeah.
Christ.
Speaking of not being able to tell the difference between reality and a TV show, it's time for Bad Choices, a podcast about a group of friends. Oh no, we're stuck in a loop!
It's all over again.
I'm a goat.
End of story. I'm a goat.
This is the best intro you've done.
It's pretty good. I'm this has destroyed me.
Welcome to Bad Choices,
a podcast.
We could just do this for an hour.
For this is it. This is the whole podcast now.
Welcome to Bad Choices, a podcast about some friends trying to figure out what it means to be a good person using only a TV sitcom as their guide.
I'm Hannah McGregor.
And I'm an adventurous hobbit who's got himself into a real pickle this time, Dilbo Baggins. Our guest this episode is returning guest... fan favorite, it's Jim Jams.
Yeah, hello.
Hi, Jim Jams.
Hi.
We missed you.
It is great to be back here and also to be the new leading host of this show.
Yeah, which one of us is you kicking out?
Choose wisely.
I mean, we will use this episode to determine which one of us has better chemistry and go from there.
All right.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, I feel like obviously it's going to be you and me, not you and your life partner.
Hey, on-air chemistry is different from...
life chemistry.
Behind closed doors chemistry.
Behind closed doors chemistry is a very elaborate way to refer to sexy times.
What did you do last night? Some behind closed doors chemistry.
Just secret chemistry. You know the secret chemistry you do behind closed doors.
Secret chemistry is
with
a fun euphemism.
Joke.
Yeah.
Where were we? Oh, hey, Jim Jams, you already know about our spoiler policy because
yes.
You've been on this before. Mm-hmm. So no spoiling beyond the end of this episode and the entire contents of this episode, which is the surprise reveal of the podcast.
This episode.
This one.
This episode.
Right now.
This one. Right here.
It's happening.
This time out, We're talking about The Good Place, Season 1, Episode 13, Michael's Gambit. In this episode, the group argue about which of them should stay and which of them should go to the bad place. Just when they are about to agree, real Eleanor arrives, deciding to take one of the places. Then, as things get heated and the group begins shouting over each other, Eleanor has a profound moment of realization. The four of them have been torturing each other by design. They've been in the bad place all along.
Dun dun dun!
Thank you,
Holy
Hannah.
Holy motherfucking shirt balls!
Such a great line.
Michael admits that Eleanor is correct and grumbles at being found out. He explains that the good place is actually a new neighborhood where they are the only four human inhabitants, perfectly selected to drive each other crazy. Janet, they learn, is not in on the ruse, as she is an actual good place Janet that was stolen. With the truth finally exposed, Michael asks to be allowed a do-over, in which he would reset their memories and adjust a few things. Sean allows this, but explains the risk that Michael is at by doing so. Flashbacks show Michael as an architect preparing his first neighborhood, his new idea, and his pitch meeting with Sean and a boardroom full of other demons. The episode ends with the group struggling to figure out a last-gasp plan to prevent their minds being wiped. With no other options, Eleanor rips a page from one of Chidi's books and writes a message to herself that she hides in Janet's mouth. After things are reset and Eleanor's hunky new soulmate leaves the house, Janet arrives to give Eleanor the note. It reads, "Eleanor, find Chidi."
Oh, that deserves a second dun-dun-dun.
Jim Jams.
Dun-dun-dun.
Thank you.
So good. So good. So musical. Okay. You know what it's time to do? It's time to rate this motherforking episode.
This time, out of a possible 5 holy motherforking shirt balls, we will be judging this episode according to the criteria of dancing ability, coolness, dopeness, freshness, and smart brained. Dancing ability.
4.
Because?
Because of that scene where Jason does that fart noise with his hands a bunch.
Okay.
It's like a dance with your hands.
Okay, okay.
He also does a USA dance.
Oh, yeah. He does do a USA dance.
He loves America.
Yeah.
That's true. That's true.
Also, Michael knocks that plant over. That's like a dance.
Yeah, I mean, you also could say that Michael's been dancing around the truth this whole time.
Great point. 5.
All right.
5 out of 5.
Also 5.
I could swear I made that argument in my last episode when I was here to justify my dancing rating.
It can't possibly be true.
And you both.
No, I have no idea what you're talking about.
No, we've never met before.
Who are you?
Read it.
Rating it. So, dancing ability. I'm going to give it a 5 holy mother forking shirt balls out of 5 for the reasons that Hannah listed before, but also because the reveal in this episode is crazy. And if you were watching it and that happened and you didn't do some sort of dance in your seat, you're not watching the show right.
Yeah. I got goosebumps and I for sure knew it was coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Powerful. Makes you want to move and groove.
Da, da, da.
Coolness.
5.
Did you give your rating?
I gave it 5. I'm also giving it 5 for coolness because of Jason. All of Jason. This is Jason at its best, truest self.
It's just a perfectly put together episode. Like, it ties together so well. The reveal is so well paced. Everybody's being their absolute best selves. It fits so much in.
So much.
It's
the plant push. Tahani's face when Eleanor realizes she's into her.
Yeah.
Also, Michael's flashbacks. That was cool.
Also, Janet saying not a robot.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Yes, we get to stay, baby. We did it.
The part where other Eleanor is revealed to really be Vicky.
And yes. She storms out in a huff.
You can all suck it.
Oh, such a cool episode. 5.
5.
5.
5s across the board. That takes us to dopeness.
5.
5.
5. Shouting. Surprises.
It's got it, like, out of 5. This is the category for twists. So it gets 500 out of 5.
Oh, there's so many twists within this episode of twists, right? There's new Eleanor coming to take the spot. There's Jason remembering and casually citing consequentialism and defining it aptly. There's the holy mother forking shirtballs moment. I mean, even the note at the end is a twist, right?
Yeah. God, it's twist so on much. Twist on twist on twist.
One of my favorite moments, I don't know if this counts as a twist or not. Yeah, you two can determine that for me, is when Eleanor brags to Michael about how she beat him, which gives him a way to redo the whole thing again, but better. When she says, all you did was bring us together. He's like, oh yeah, you're right. I'll just do it differently next time.
It's not really a twist, but it is definitely like an awesome, unexpected thing. Mm-hmm. That you think that like, oh, she's figured it out. That's going to change things. And then I guess it is another twist when it's like, oh no, I'm just going to erase your memories and start over.
And she sets up how he's going to make it harder for them next time. Cool. Fives across the board, which takes us to
freshness.
Five. It's so good. It just brings everything together so effectively. You get the sort of first half is this like bottle episode where like people are really trying to like apply the ethical education they've had and think through the consequences of different decisions. And then it culminates in this big twist and then everything like spins off in this totally different direction. And it's just cohesive and tight. And one of the freshest things on that sort of Jason note is when he's defending his right to stay in the good place. And he's like, I didn't hurt anybody. I just stayed out of everybody's way. Mm. And it's like, yeah, you did. Like, you haven't actually done anything bad.
I thought about this as we were watching this episode. When Eleanor's describing each of them, Jason's, by their definition of what makes bad amongst the group, he's the least bad.
Yeah.
Chidi is rigid and indecisive and stubborn. Tahani is selfish and spiteful and a fraud. Eleanor's mean and immature and selfish. He's just an idiot DJ.
Yep.
I do have a counterpoint. When they were at Mindy St. Clair's, just in the last episode, he attempted to blow up the train with a Molotov cocktail in order to thwart Eleanor. That's pretty bad.
You're right. That's a really good point.
But I'm still giving it five, though.
Oh, yeah.
I'll give it five. Also, another thing that I really liked, maybe this falls under the twist category a little more, actually, but the fact that Janet is not a part of, like, either group.
And is actually in love with Jason. Like, that
is actually for real in love with Jason. Yeah, because it's like they tell you that this whole thing has been a lie, but then they're like, oh, except for that one thing.
That one, that the one. Weirdest thing that has happened. No, that's real.
And last and maybe least, Smart Brain.
Five.
So Smart Brain, five.
Defend your ratings.
Excellent use of consequentialism. Yeah. Reintroduction of several of the key ethical themes. But more than anything else, the way that it brings everything back to the question of what we owe each other by having Eleanor write the instructions, find Chidi on that page, which beautifully summarizes the entire subtext of the first season, which is that hell was supposed to be other people, but it turned out that via other people, they actually made it into their own good place.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, that's what came out of the ethical education that she was getting.
They helped each other and survived because of each other.
I also like that this entire season, they have been serving Tahani and Chidi to us as these good people who deserve to be here. And then they're like, actually, like everything we told you about them was true, but they were terrible people. And here's why. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just very interesting how you can like see them in both ways. And it kind of shows you that what's on the surface is not indicative of what is truly going on underneath.
Yeah, it adds some significant complication to how we've been thinking about ethics and what makes somebody ethical.
Eleanor mentions when she's saying goodbye to Chidi at the beginning, at the very beginning, before real Eleanor comes and takes one of the places and complicates things, when Jason and Eleanor are saying goodbye and she says to Chidi, I was dropped in a cave and you were my flashlight. Is that like a reference to the cave, like Plato's?
I read that as a reference to the clave or the cave, one or the other. Also yeah, no, smart. That's how I heard that as well.
Ah, double smart-brained.
Yeah, so smart-brained.
55 holy mother forking shirtballs.
This episode is perfect and it gets 100% on everything forever.
Great work, everyone.
I want to watch it again. Cancel the podcast.
Okay. Just sit there and listen to us watching this episode again for 22 minutes.
Yeah. We can't put any of the audio from the episode in, though, because that's copyright issue.
What if we just pause the recording and come back 22 minutes from now?
I think there should be 22 minutes of dead air. So people can watch along with us. But it's not going to be like a commentary track. It's just going to be dead air.
That brings us to...
What?
Our lightning round. It's time to warm up your brains and your butts.
Our brains and our butts?
Yep.
What are you going to do to my butt?
Time will tell. Are you too ready for a little can't stop, won't stop?
So ready.
This time, we are gonna start with Hannah. What's more useful, intelligence or wisdom?
Wisdom.
Jamie, same question.
Wisdom.
Jamie, is calling someone a robot lover racist?
No.
Hannah.
No, robot's not a racist.
Hannah, what is one thing you learned a little too late in life?
Oh my God, like how to make a vinaigrette dressing. I said the ratios off. And then it was like 50-50 vinegar and oil, and it turns out it's supposed to be way more oil than vinegar.
Duly noted.
It doesn't emulsify otherwise, and it's just like tastes really acidic.
This is Hannah's Dressings, a podcast within a podcast where you learn about vinegar.
Also, why they call them saucepans? I didn't realize it's because you cook sauce.
That's
what
you make sauce in.
I'm a real dum-dum.
Dum-dums and...
Cum-cums.
Yeah. Call back. Jim Jams, what is one thing you learned a little too late in life?
I mean, I can't think of a quick answer for this, but I have a short
story.
Was it
how bad your childhood was?
Yes.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Ah, teamwork. Beautiful. I fucking love this podcast.
Sorry, was that too real?
I'm like, how much do you know?
Oh, only that. None of the content. Okay. Only the thesis statement.
Okay, I'm going to go with that. Yes, that is that is my answer.
Hannah, good answer. Jim Jams, what animal do you think you could kick the furthest?
A turtle.
Okay. Hannah, same question.
A guinea pig, but like a bad one.
Because they're more aerodynamic.
What about like a sugar glider?
You've already answered.
If you could encourage it to glide throughout the second half of its
trajectory. Yeah, bird, and then it just flies.
Yeah. As long as it doesn't land, that counts as you having kicked it that far.
Okay, cacao. Hannah. Other people, take them or leave them.
Oh, take them.
Jim Jams?
Yeah, leave them.
Fine, I'll take them.
All right, Hannah gets all the people. Jim Jams, what is one thing that would be in your good place?
Animals.
Hannah, same question.
She looks terrified.
I'm just going to say cats. I know it's a subset of animals, but I'm just going to say cats.
Yeah, there's no wrong answers. Actually, there are very definitely wrong answers in Can't Stop, Won't
You can
Stop.
Live in the cats section of my good place.
Thank you.
Hannah, when they find it, what will be the name of the position that allows Janet and Jason to have sex?
It's going to be moss growing slowly on a rock.
Beautiful. Oh my God, that's poetic as shirt. Jim Jams, same question.
corrosive battery pack.
Whoa.
Wild.
Whoa.
That's wild. Fucker. Jim Jams, who is one person you would not want to be trapped with for eternity?
I mean, there are too many options here. I'm going to pick the low-hanging fruit and say Donald Trump.
Okay, great. Hannah, same question. One person you would not want to be trapped with for eternity?
I mean, I don't want to name names. Just seems mean.
That's fair.
Anybody who's, like, a really close talker.
Okay.
Imagine being trapped with a close talker for eternity.
Oh, my God.
Ooh, I would like to change my answer to that weird chlorine stick that floats around the hot tub.
Just trash just always floats to where you're sitting.
It always comes right up to me.
So rude.
Just wants to be friends. Final question. Hannah, do you think you're a good person?
Yeah.
Jim Jams.
Yes.
Okay, this has been Can't Stop, Won't Stop. We are stopping.
Uh-uh.
Forever.
No.
I mean, for a bit.
Okay.
Oh, make Hannah sad. She loves can't stop, won't stop.
I love it.
Lightning is her favorite...
Round.
Weather phenomena.
Lightning is my favorite color.
Okay. Eleanor, when she's explaining how she came to her realization, one of the first things she says is, we've been torturing each other since the moment we arrived. Right? We see Michael planning his scheme, and I feel like, I mean, Hannah, I think, has already brought it up briefly, but one of the inspirations for the show is the play No Exit by Jean-Paul Sartre.
Sartre. We've talked about this on a previous episode.
We have, and the play... has been summed up to me and by me to others with the phrase, hell is other people. And I have often felt and agreed with that sentiment. This is where I wanted to start. Hell is other people. Agree or disagree, and why?
Yeah, I mean, what does he mean by that? I've never seen the play or read it.
I mean, I've heard this, but maybe, yeah, let's talk a little bit more about what that means before we answer it.
In the play, there are essentially three main characters who realize they are in some version of hell, a single room that they cannot leave. A butler of sorts comes to talk to them and explain things to them from time to time. But essentially, the three of them are stuck together, and their personalities, interests, ways of being around other people make it so that aspects of who they are torture the other people. Someone likes someone else romantically, but that is impossible. Someone wants to talk all the time. Someone wants to be left alone. And as soon as they realize this is it, they kind of fall into conflict, reach a detente, and then pause, fall back into conflict immediately. And over the few different scenes in the exact same room, you realize that no matter how they try to start to be together, wherever that begins, it ends up with one or all of them being miserable. Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, there's this other idea of how, like, being around other people forces us to see you for how you really are. Right, you see yourself through them, through mm-hmm. their perspective, the things that you would otherwise not notice about yourself or ignore because you don't like them. And that is also hell.
Mm. I'm going to say I agree with this idea, because if I imagine two scenarios, one in which I am trapped in a room completely alone and one in which I'm trapped in a room with the worst people in existence, the room with the worst people in existence is going to be worse than the room where I'm alone.
And yet, solitary confinement has been proven to be the thing that makes people go crazy fastest in prison, rather than literally being incarcerated with other people who have often done really terrible things, that being alone is the worst thing you can do to a person. We are such fundamentally social animals that there is nothing that is a worse torture than isolation.
I agree that humans are social beings, and I do feel that I would rather be with people than alone. But I would rather be alone than with what I feel are, like, the worst people in existence.
But the play isn't about the worst of the people.
Yeah.
They are just other people, and parts of the other people that bubble to the surface are the ones that frustrate you, and then you focus on the parts of them that frustrate you and make you angry.
Mm-hmm.
The part at which the characters in the show, Eleanor specifically, departs from the type of story that was in the play is when she begins to change because she realizes she has to coexist with other people.
Yeah.
The people in the play refuse to change. They're stubborn. Yeah. They won't change. They can't see things from the perspective of anyone else. And they go in this kind of torturous circle.
So there's a question at the heart of that, which is, do we change one another when we are together?
Mm-hmm.
Or do we remain belligerently ourselves? And there's a sort of an ethical question in there about subjectivity versus intersubjectivity. Like, is our identity deeply tied in with other people, or is it just sort of this whole isolated thing? And I incline to think the former, that we constantly influence one another and constantly change one another, and that the closer we are in proximity to each other, the more likely we are to change, to see things from one another's perspective. I don't want to be idealistic about it, because I think that sometimes there can be this sort of oversimplification of, like, well, you just need to, like, talk to somebody, you know, if you're homophobic, you just need to talk to a gay person and they'll change your mind. And it's like, no, like, I think some, like, I think it's more complicated than that. And there's more factors at play than that. But I think it's undeniable that we change one another when we are in relationships with one another.
Yeah. What I thought of while you were talking was a similar question, but framed differently. It was like, can you become a better person in the absence of other people? Right? I wonder, like, thinking about things I've wanted to change or improve about myself, wanting to be around and in the world in different ways is because of the people around me in kind of two senses of the word, so that I can be a better person when I'm with those people, and also because they make me want to be better people.
And also, is there any such thing as being a good person in isolation?
Yeah.
Isn't goodness only in relation to others?
I was just going to ask that. Yeah, because if you're completely alone, how you behave doesn't matter. Whereas when you're around people, that changes significantly.
Yeah. It's purely theoretical. If you're just isolated. I mean, there are ways to be ethical in relation to the, like, more than human world, right? Like,
yes.
Ethics applies to your relationship to the entire, to all of creation, all of existence. But that's still relationship. Like, that's still, you know, not being totally alone. Like, if you're totally alone, there's nothing to be ethical about.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, like, it depends on what you have access to if you're totally alone. Like, because I feel like you can become a better person by reading or, I don't know.
But it's only theoretical, right?
But also, in that sense, that another person is kind of there, like, accessing your brain a little bit, even though they're not physically there. It's like you're still sort of with someone, the person who wrote or the person who maybe made a TV show. Or
also a great point. You are still kind of in dialogue with somebody
else.
You're
still being influenced by another person, even if they're not there.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was thinking of how that would look completely in isolation without any other people. And the decisions I would make and how I would choose to live would still be informed by what I know of other people or what other people have done or what I've experienced of. And I'm thinking, like, definitely some of the most miserable experiences of my life have involved and been the result of other people. Other people have made me the most miserable in my life, but my happiest moments have been because of other people.
Mm-hmm. Other people make us human. Like, that's it. It's all of the good and all of the bad.
So
comes
hell,
through relation.
Hell is other people, but heaven is also other people.
Yeah. And I think that's what the show's getting at. That it's both. They are torturing each other, and they are also making each other better.
They help each other and improve each other
at
the same time. That's like any type of relationship. There's going to be conflict, and then you also grow and change as a result.
Yeah. Solved it.
We did it. Great.
Let's do a segment.
Okay.
It's time for Three Fucking Birds.
1, 2, 3 birds, 1, 2, 3 birds, 1, 2, 3 birds, 1, 2, 3 birds.
Okay, here's how Three Birds works.
Set
I give you three problems, and you have to come up with a single metaphorical stone that will solve all of them.
I hate this segment.
Three birds, one stone. You ready? I've got four scenarios.
Jesus Christ.
Scenario one. There's a mosquito in your room while you're trying to sleep. You just remembered you have a test tomorrow and you haven't studied. And you have an undiagnosed brain tumor.
I'm going to assume that your test is in anatomy.
I mean, go ahead.
Okay. So you thank the mosquito for keeping you awake so you can go study anatomy and learn how to operate on your own brain tumor.
It's incredible. He's incredible at this.
I don't even want to go now.
Okay, you can have scenario two. You can have the first shot at scenario two. You missed the bus. An asteroid is rapidly approaching the Earth, and you've got a blister between your pinky and your ring finger.
Ride that asteroid.
How does that solve the blister problem?
I mean, an asteroid is going to be hot. It'll cauterize that shit.
He's not wrong. Okay, get an Evo. Put your hand right over the air conditioning vent in the Evo to cool the pain away and drive to a faraway place where the asteroid won't hurt you.
Better. You're doing better. You're getting better. Scenario.
That's worse than catch the asteroid?
Yeah. Scenario three.
Fuck this. Jesus Christ.
You stubbed your toe like super bad. That was inspired by that time that you stubbed your toe super bad.
Yeah.
You can't remember where you left your keys, and the American government is fast approaching fascism.
I don't understand. draw myself a bath. I can't leave the house because I don't have keys, so I might as well enjoy a day off. And I don't live in the U.S., so sorry, suckers. Free healthcare for me. Bath. The answer is draw a bath.
Bath. Okay. All right. All right. It's pretty good.
That's good. My only answer for this is burn it down.
Yes. It's also good. Both good.
Mine was better. I could have a bath.
Have you burned your whole building down? You don't need to have keys. Final scenario. You've just been told you're allergic to your favorite food. Whales are approaching extinction due to global warming. And you've got a really bad sliver.
Eat the sliver because you can't eat whales, your favorite food, anymore. I win the game.
Oh my god, I think you just won the game.
Yeah, I don't know if I can top that. And
I've been hustling you two this whole time. I'm great at this.
Oh my god, I feel so hustled. If only we hadn't put so much money on this last round. Wow, in a shocking twist, the winner of this round of three birds is Dilbo Baggins.
Can we get the rights to that song?
No? Yeah, for sure.
Okay, great. God, I love three birds.
What an upset.
I'm going to think up a great answer, and I'm just going to blurt it out in the middle of a future segment.
Oh, man. Okay. Here's the other thing I want to talk about. Right after the holy mother forking shirtballs moment, when Eleanor discovers what's actually going on, she immediately goes to this kind of overconfident braggart in terms of her personality. Like, that's her reaction when she has the big aha moment. And one level of the twist that isn't addressed really deeply in this episode because they're worrying about their lives is the fact that Michael and Sean are evil. They are evil. They've been surrounded by these evildoers for so long. And now that is something that they have to reckon with. What that makes me think about, a friend of mine who lives in the States right now posted something on Instagram a couple weeks ago with the quote that said, "What makes us ethical is how we engage with evil, not how we avoid it." And that made me think about how we engage with bad things in our life, like bullies or evil corporations or abusers or bigots. Like, what do we do when we're faced with that? In the real world, not in fantasy good place world.
Yeah, I love this question. That's such an interesting way of reading sort of what Eleanor does in that moment, and also the way the narrative has now shifted, that originally there wasn't really evil in the show, right? It was good people and good things, and then somebody who was maybe not as good, but it was never suggested she was an evil person. But now they are face to face with evil and having to grapple with it. And I am very firmly on the side of it is our job to be confronting, engaging with, and grappling with evil in whatever way it manifests in our lives. And not in every way all the time, but in some way and a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people who really think that it is fine to just avoid it as much as you can. To just say, like, well, you know,
not my problem.
I'm not racist. None of my friends are racist. Global warming, what could I possibly do about it? Like, who just take this avoidant attitude.
Just turn a blind eye.
Yeah. Which in my mind is honestly one of the most evil things you can do.
Yeah.
So I have thoughts and feelings about this also. Because I agree with everything that you just said, Hannah. But at the same time, I feel like, I don't know, maybe you've talked about this. This is something that I talk about a lot. But our society has developed this sort of call-out culture, which I feel is also just as unhelpful or maybe even worse than being avoidant. because everyone, like, everyone is on the lookout these days for evil, essentially, right? Like, we're all looking at the next celebrity or politician who's, like, done something really terrible, and everyone wants to be the first person to notice and call that person out and just be like, hey, I'm the one who pointed out that this person's a shit, so everyone praise me. And that's the whole point of this conversation, is that I'm a genius who figured this out. And I feel like that just sort of further entrenches the people who were doing wrong into their position, because they're now just being fully attacked.
Yeah. I actually think that that version of call-out culture is much closer to avoidance than to confrontation. The example that I often use, and that I was taught to me by my friend Rebecca, is about rape culture and how one of the main manifestations of rape culture, or a key manifestation of rape culture, is the way in which we want to other the rapist. So we want people who commit acts of sexual violence to be monsters who are beyond the pale. And once they have been named, they are ceremonially cast out of our society and nobody ever speaks to them again. They're incarcerated. They're declared monsters. And that image of the rapist perpetuates a fundamental logic of rape culture, which is that people in your community are not also rapists. And that's the whole thing, is that people we know, you have friends who are rapists, 100% undeniably. It's statistically, there's no chance that we don't all have friends who are rapists. That's the nature of rape culture. They don't think that they're bad. We don't think that they're bad. And if we were forced to come to terms with what they'd done on the terms of rape culture, we would be like, oh, well, you're bad now, so you have to go away because bad people go away.
Right.
Right. But what does it mean instead of that version of, like, well, I have named you as evil and I have cast you out? That's this, like, idea that we can create a sort of pure world in which we don't have to grapple with evil. But what is it to actually grapple with evil within our communities, within our lives, within ourselves, and say, the rapist is not some monster. The rapist is a person I know, and we as a community need to grapple with the widespread nature of sexual violence, with the widespread nature of racism, with the widespread nature of ableism, misogyny, homophobia. And it can't be that we cast out the people who perform these things. It's got to be that we engage these problems head on, make people accountable, call people in, call people to account.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Identify the things that perpetuate rape culture that aren't explicit rape, like laughing at rape jokes in the locker room, or not saying anything when there's misogynistic jokes or catcalling as you walk down the street. Like, letting all those things go, or being okay with those things, perpetuate the culture, the system. It can't just take out the one bad apple, because it's not just one bad apple, it's everyone else who's holding them up and supporting.
And it's absolutely a manifestation of sort of contemporary social justice oriented culture, that sort of intense call out and the toxicity that comes with it. And it is a really violent and ultimately toxic face of, like, cultures that I think, and communities that I think we are all to some degree part of. And there's some really good writing and thinking being done on the topic right now. Kai Cheng Tom's new book, which is called I Hope We Choose Love, has essays about exactly this topic, about, like, dealing with call-out culture and the toxicity of social justice communities. And I think it's really necessary work and thinking that's happening. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the roots of it is exactly that thing, is that idea that we can create heaven on earth if we just cast out everyone who is unclean. And that's such dangerous thinking.
I also feel like this call-out culture is largely based in a lack of understanding, right? Because I feel like a lot of people these days will call out, say, a white person for wearing cornrows or dreadlocks. They'll be accused of cultural appropriation.
Yeah, white people shouldn't wear dreadlocks.
I agree. It's not okay.
It's a bad look.
But
shave your head.
If you are calling out a white person for wearing dreadlocks or cornrows, you should understand why that's not okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there is a lot of people being like, that's bad. I don't know why, but I heard it was bad.
And then that's why they only yell at you, because they don't know how to explain what you should be doing otherwise, or why what you're doing is wrong. They only know that it is wrong because that's what they've been told.
It's what Hannah said a few minutes ago, right? Like, call-out culture is essentially avoidance. That's not engaging with the problem. It's avoiding the problem. It's pointing at something they think is bad from a distance and staying away from it because they don't want to, are unable, or don't know how to actually engage with it, or they don't know why it's bad. They just don't want to be called bad, so they're distancing themselves from the bad thing by pointing a finger and staying far away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When they've probably, you know, are guilty of cultural appropriation or racism or whatever in the past, but if I can point out someone else who's doing that bad thing now, relationally, that makes me look good. Except, no, that's not how it works.
Oh, but I've climbed up the rung. I climb up the rung of good white people by climbing on top of other worse white people.
Oh, the ladder's on fire. You're all going to fall into a garbage heap.
The ladder of like white ethical posturing is very much on fire.
Yeah, and because engaging with that shit is actually hard. Mm. I have engaged with bigots and bullies and, you know, have had broken noses and broken ribs as a result. I mean, often I say things that I shouldn't say and my mouth gets me in trouble. It's safer and easier to point your finger from a distance, but that's not going to change anything. That just allows the evil to keep existing, and you just pretend you're at arm's length from it.
Not to mention, if you don't understand what you're calling out, you could be misrecognizing something.
100%.
And you could, like, point the finger of cultural appropriation at someone who is not at all guilty. And a bunch of, like, the people who don't understand will also just follow your lead. And suddenly that person is like...
Yeah. Like fucking pylons. I have participated in Twitter pylons before I learned better. Where it's like, a little while ago, a newspaper hired this illustrator. I can't remember the context of it, but they had done these illustrations that were meant to represent indigenous culture, and a bunch of people on Twitter were like, these are super racist, this is cultural appropriation, this is really inappropriate representation of indigenous culture, you know, this newspaper is an idiot, they should have hired an indigenous artist, but it escalated so rapidly, and I was totally on there, like, retweeting things like, oh, yeah, and then, like, an hour later, somebody was like, the illustrator is totally indigenous, though, and it was like, oh... Wow. Like that. And that's not to say like, oh, well, it's an indigenous person. So any art they create is automatically cool. Like there's conversations to be had there. It ceases to be my conversation. That's a conversation to happen within communities of indigenous creators about representation in their own culture. And also like I should have paused and Googled a thing. Like,
yeah, engage with it. Understand what's actually going on, or at least try to understand what's going on, or your relation to the injustice. Look for patterns in your past where you have experienced that or been a part of it and understand why it's bad or how it manifests elsewhere or what you could do rather than just.
Mm-hmm. A lot of harm could be prevented by like doing a Google.
Yeah, I think a lot of
due diligence.
A lot of people just get that gut feeling, like they see or they hear something and they're like, oh, that feels wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And people trust their gut, which like can work out. Mm-hmm. But I feel like when someone's like reputation or life is on the line, go on more than just your gut feeling.
I mean, I think we can trust our guts and then also need to like do our due diligence.
Yeah, that's like, sorry, that's what I'm saying here is that like
trust your gut and let your gut lead you in the direction of learning more.
Yeah.
And figuring things out.
Don't just think that your gut's giving you the entire story.
Yeah.
Engage rather than avoid.
Yay, avoidance.
No.
Avoidance is complicity. Whoops.
Yeah, there's evil all around you all the time.
Where?
If you want to be a good person, you have to learn a little bit about it. And it's scary and hard and makes me sad a lot of the time. But.
What a fun podcast.
I don't know what the but is.
But you don't have to do it 100% of the time. You can take breaks and play video games.
You can take breaks. It's hard. It's definitely hard. But being ethical is hard. So pony up.
Like you also feels better.
It feels better. And you also like you kind of just said, you just have to remember that it doesn't have to be your entire life. You don't have to devote your entire being to changing everything. But play a part. If everybody plays a part, then a lot will get done.
Yeah. 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 And we don't all have to play the same part. It's okay if lots of people are taking different paths, as long as we're all doing something.
Do you want to do some jokes now?
Yes.
To make me unsad?
Yes.
Okay. This is a segment called Froyo FOMO.
Good. What? The moods shift between these two segments. I'm going to get whiplash.
You've got that Froyo FOMO.
Oh, Okay, do you remember Froyo FOMO?
Oh, I do, but remind our listeners.
In this segment, I will list two hypothetical frozen yogurt flavors that maybe were available in the Good Place. You have to choose one, knowing that you will never get to have the other ever. This is a zero-sum situation. You pick one, the other is gone.
I love it how much you're trying to raise the stakes for this totally hypothetical game.
There needs to be stakes, otherwise we're just saying words for no reason. Are you ready?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, up first, whiskers on kittens or warm woolen mittens?
So wait, I choose the one that I want to experience.
Yes, choose the one you want, knowing you will never have the other. Whiskers on kittens or warm woolen mittens?
The answer is whiskers on kittens.
Correct. Up next, snuggling or bear hug?
Bear hug.
Snuggling.
Okay. Learning a lot. Driving at night or climbing a tree?
Climbing a tree.
Oh my God, you two have nothing in common. Good luck with your podcast.
Or we're going to make like the best froyo date because we want different flavors.
We come together because opposites attract.
There we go. We got there in the end. Up next, watching the rain or lucid dream?
Oh my God, lucid dream.
Watching the rain.
This is wild.
Okay, you know you could watch the rain in a lucid dream, right?
Fuck you.
Okay. Hot yoga or happy tears?
Happy tears.
Yeah, like...
Hot yoga's bad.
Hot yoga... That's not good.
Okay, great. Mosh pit or road trip?
Road trip.
Okay, here we go.
We're back on track.
Two more. Sequels that don't suck or upgrade to business class?
Upgrade to business class.
Okay. Last one. This is for all of the hypothetical marbles. Girls in white dresses with blue satin sashes or snowflakes that stay on your nose and eyelashes?
Snowflakes.
Hey!
There we go.
For bonus points, name that song.
These are a few of my favorite things.
Okay. Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens.
Were all of those references to that song?
Yeah. It's got that famous line about being upgraded to business. Lucid dreaming or hot yoga.
Hot yoga.
These are a few of my favorite things.
Okay. But Whiskers on Kittens was there.
Yes, the first two and the last two.
Okay.
Brown paper packages tied up with string.
I don't know this song very well.
Isn't there one with like noodles and schnitzel? Schnitzel and noodles and something.
Schnitzel and noodles.
And something rhymes with noodles.
Poodles.
Okay. We've seen over this season, Chidi trying to teach Eleanor how to be a good person. They took classes, he made her read books, and she was learning. She learned things. She got better. She read the books. She casually cited Immanuel Kant at one point. She realized her motivation was flawed and chose to leave. What Chidi had her learning helped her become a better person. So here's my question for the two of you. If you could teach everyone in the world one concept or idea, what could you teach that you think would have the biggest positive impact?
Self-awareness.
Whoa.
I spoke about this on the last episode that I was here. I think self-awareness is one of the most important aspects of being a good person. You can't be a good person if you don't understand the effect that you're having on the world around you.
How do you do that? How would you teach that to someone? What does that look like?
I mean, I was thinking this was just like a magic world where I was able to teach anything I want. Okay,
That's
let me...
That's not how teaching works.
Math. Now you all know math. Or what does it look like for you? How have you worked on your self-awareness?
I grew up in a situation where I was constantly called out on everything I was doing.
Okay.
And so that made me very aware of the fact that I was doing it and the fact that people around me maybe didn't like some of the things that I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just forced me to think about that all the time. And now that's what I, like, whenever I say or do pretty much anything, that thought process always happens in my head. So I think, honestly, that might be what teaching it kind of looks like. Try and start thoughtful conversations about like various topics. And then whenever someone says something that is like hurtful or problematic, you need to like stop everything and be like, let's dissect what was just said here. Let's figure out why you said it, and let's figure out if that's actually what you meant, or if you were, if your intent was something else. I don't know. I don't know how you teach self-awareness, but everyone needs to have it, so just figure it out.
Spoken like a natural teacher. Yeah. I don't know how to teach this, but you need to know it, so figure it out.
Well, for Eleanor, it looks like her reflecting on her past experiences with the benefit of time and space, and trying to understand why she would do certain things, how she would do those things, how that impacted other people, and then when or how she could do those things differently, how she could be around people differently, how she could make choices a little differently by reflecting.
Oh my God, I figured it out.
Okay, and we're back in class with Jim Jams. Take it away.
Everyone is going to be on a reality television show. You are going to have, like, free reign to do whatever you want, and then your worst behavior is going to be recorded and broadcast to the world, and then everyone's going to tell you what's up.
I don't think that would work. I don't think seeing yourself recorded is the same thing as becoming self-aware.
I have seen it work repeatedly on several seasons of RuPaul's Drag Race.
That explains why everybody who's been on reality TV is such a good person.
Oh, no. Your theory is fundamentally flawed.
That's totally fair. But there's something to, like, being recorded. Like, because that's essentially what's happening with Eleanor in the show, is that she's having all of her worst behaviors, like, brought up and played back for her, and then she's able to sort of see them from a third party perspective, and that's how she kind of realizes.
I think what you're both trying to get at is that, like, possibility of standing outside of yourself and looking at your own behavior, and that's the great challenge of self-awareness, is that you can't do that.
But reality, like, TV
being filmed doesn't work. It's only possible for Eleanor because she's dead. Like, in your actual life, like, there are ways to try to get that perspective, you know, through feedback from other people, through taking the time to reflect on your actions, etc. I think therapy is a great way to arrive at self-awareness. And if therapy was more just built into our lives and was a more natural thing that lots and lots of people did, that might be a way to sort of increase the average amount of self-awareness. But, like, that fantasy of being able to, like, stand outside of yourself and look at yourself objectively, like, I think that's why life is so hard, because we don't get to do that.
That's true.
Yeah.
Okay, but I thought of an exercise that maybe everyone can take home with them and practice. So the next time you're out in the world and someone does something that really bothers you, that upsets you, maybe you think that they were being thoughtless or an asshole, I want you to stop, and before you just fly off the handle and, like, go rant to somebody about this person, just think about something you might have done that day that maybe unintentionally bothered somebody else, even if it was just in a minor way. This way we can all be aware that none of us are perfect, and hopefully be a little more understanding towards people who do things that bother us, and hopefully call attention to things that we do that bother other people that maybe we weren't aware of.
I love this activity. Next time you're frustrated with somebody else, just remember that you suck.
No.
It's
it's true they suck, but also you suck. When you think about it, aren't we all trash?
But no, that's kind of
rather than being like, oh no, this person is also doing their best, be like, no, you are also doing
no
a bad
but
job.
I feel like
I think there's something underneath what Jim Jams is saying, though. Like, there's something useful.
How dare you?
There's some kernel of usefulness buried in all of that.
Because in those moments that he says, when someone harms you, I feel like part of being self-aware is realizing that when someone hurts you or butts in line at the grocery store or cuts you off in traffic or whatever, you can remember that your story isn't the only story. They're also in the middle of their own thing and their own world. And I feel like self-awareness is partly recognizing that it's not just you against the world around you, but everyone is also operating from that first person perspective where they're the center of everything. They didn't cut you off in traffic to make you mad. It wasn't about you. Things happen to you, sure. It's not always about you.
I feel like that is exactly what I said.
Yep.
Hannah, what's one concept or idea? What's one thing you would teach people that might have a positive impact?
I mean, it's literally my job.
As a teacher. Okay, so yeah. What do you teach people that would have a positive impact in the world?
I would say if there is a skill set that I am trying to teach people, it is, I mean, it's not that different from what you were just talking about. It is about denaturalizing your own perspective on things, because we are so inside our own perspectives in our own heads that we assume those perspectives to be neutral rather than deeply saturated in like our culturally specific moment and our bias and our upbringing and our social contexts and our media environments and all of the stuff that's constantly framing how we see things. And so I'm often trying to teach students how to understand how those framings and mediations are working, how they inform what you can see and what you can't, and what it might mean to sort of take a step back and try to see things from a different perspective, which is why I like teaching history a lot, because in order to really wrap your mind around a historical moment, you have to step outside of all of the sort of default assumptions of your own present moment and try to occupy a different time and space. And as an intellectual exercise, I think that's so helpful, because the better you get at stepping outside your own assumptions and seeing things differently, there it's going to make you more empathetic. It's going to make you more open-minded. It's going to make you more flexible about your perspectives. It's going to make you better at learning in general, better at understanding people and where they come from. And I think there's lots of different ways that you can train people to do that. Like I said, I often use history to do it. I think art can do that really well. All kinds of art that show you the world from perspectives that aren't your own, that sort of immerse you into the worlds of others. I think going out and working in communities can do that, really spending time with people whose lives are really different from yours. So I think there's lots and lots of different ways to get at that. But I think that like denaturalizing your own perspective is what I would have everybody learn.
Great. Those are both good answers.
Also, Hannah, like your answer was much better than mine.
I mean, it's literally my job, so it should be. It would have been really awkward if it wasn't. Like, okay. That would have been really weird. Like, if I, like, no.
But the thing that I wanted to say, though, is that I feel like we were kind of in the same vein still.
I think so,
because we were both still talking about expanding your personal perception by stepping outside of your own experience.
Yes, absolutely.
So, can I just
get
say,
outside your own head a little bit.
You two have great chemistry.
Yeah, we're going to make a podcast without you.
Okay, I can't wait to listen to it.
It's going
to
be about Stardew Valley.
That's not at all surprising. Hey, do you want to do another segment?
Yep.
This one's called Bad to the Bone. This is a quiz type segment, similar to Geopardy, except all the answers start with the word good or the word bad. I do not need you to state your answers in the form of a question. However, I do need you to buzz or ding in quickly, because there are points.
I just got the Geopardy thing.
I'm going to win.
Okay. Are your buzzers ready?
What's my... I mean, yes. I don't know what it is, but yes.
Hannah, you're gonna win. Number one, this 1966 Beach Boys hit shares its name with the 1991
Bazinga.
Hannah.
Good Vibrations.
Correct.
Good vibrations.
All right.
My buzzer is Bazinga.
So we're allowed to just buzz in before the question's
done? Have you not seen Geopardy?
Until 2 minutes ago, I didn't even know what that was. So.
Great point.
Yeah. Yeah, you can buzz in whenever you want.
Okay, well, good to know.
Okay, number two. This prolific Los Angeles punk rock band has been active since 1980 and is known for songs like American Jesus and 21st Century Digital Boy that address topics like religion, politics, and science.
Ooh, I know.
Is that your buzzer? It's such a good buzzer. Ooh, I know.
Turn that into a ringtone. Jamie, you've buzzed in uniquely.
I don't know. I don't know the answer. That was not my buzzer.
I also don't know.
I feel like I know it, but I don't know the band's name.
Their songs often address topics like science, politics, and religion.
Bazinga.
Yes, Hannah.
Bad Religion.
Correct.
Oh, fuck.
Remember how it's either good or bad at the beginning of the...
Oh, I was missing a key element of this game.
Ha!
Okay.
All it was the in answers the description. Start with good or bad.
I was thrown by several things, but now I'm here, and okay. Let's go.
Number three. This folk rock hit from 1973 has been covered dozens of times and is about a title character who is, quote, the baddest man in the whole damn town.
Bazinga.
Hannah.
Bad Leroy Brown.
Correct. Crushing it.
Ooh.
Number four, Jim Jams. It's time for a big comeback. You got this? Turn it around. Ready? You look ready. This 2018 neo-noir thriller was written, produced, and directed by Drew Goddard, also a director and executive producer on The Good Place. And it follows seven strangers coming together over one night in a shady hotel on the California-Nevada border. 2018 movie. Neo-noir thriller. Shady characters. Bad Times at the El Royale.
Oh, I've heard of that.
I don't know any of these.
Oh. You don't know Good Vibrations?
Okay. Good vibrations.
Okay, Good Vibrations I knew.
Bad Leroy Brown. Baddest man in the whole damn town. Badder than old King Cole.
I don't know that.
Meaner than a junkyard dog.
Yeah, I don't know it.
All right. Well, you've got three more to come back. And
you'll know these.
You've got to get these ones.
All right.
At least two of them. This 1987 movie starred Robin Williams as a DJ on the Armed Forces Radio Service, who becomes very popular with the troops, but not his superiors.
Bazinga.
Hannah.
Good Morning Vietnam.
Correct. This 2009 Lady Gaga hit features the lyrics Ra Ra Ah 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 Roma Roma Ma Gaga Ooh La La.
Okay, buzzer.
Yes. Jim Jams.
Bad Romance.
Correct.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Gaga, ah, ah, ah.
Blah, blah, na, na, na.
Ooh, do, do, do.
For 1,000 points, the final question.
I'm ready.
All or nothing. This 1997 film by Gus Van Sant featured Robin Williams, Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, and Minnie Driver, and made famous the phrase, how do you like them apples?
Bazinga!
Hannah!
Goodwill Hunting!
Oh, yeah, it's crushed it! And as we tally up these scores, the winner is...
Jim Jams, clearly.
Me.
I feel like this test was biased.
Towards?
People who are older than I am.
Extremely rude. Extremely rude.
You two are like a year and a half apart. Yeah.
How old are you?
Year and a half apart, maybe.
You were in 1986?
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Year and a half apart.
Sorry, you were saying Jim Jams?
I stand by it.
Whoo. Woo.
Okay. We've been doing these talks for 13 episodes about good people stuff. What is one thing?
Can that be the new tagline? Doing talks about good people stuff.
Absolutely can, yes. I'll make that our official subtitle. Put it on all our merch. What is one thing you're trying to get better at as a person and why?
Mine is pausing before reacting. In all kinds of ways. Like we've talked about this already in this episode, including around things that I sort of think I know what's going on and want to pile on or jump in. Scenarios where I have a gut reaction about what the thing I do should be, or interactions where something about how the interaction is going causes a sort of instinctive emotional reaction in me. I think one of my worst traits as a person is testiness. Like, and I get impatient with people.
I believe your quote was, fuck you, you're not better than
fuck
me.
Fuck you, you're not better than me. But like, I catch myself particularly in situations like when I'm stressed out, I can really lash out, like airports. I get really rude to people at airports because I'm stressed out. And it's like, you just need to take a deep breath, take a step back, get a little perspective on what's going on here, and like, just chill.
Yeah.
And I think in general that like, pause, take a minute, take a breath, take a time out, take a day, take a week. Don't react immediately. Give things time. And it can feel in this day and age like we need to constantly be reacting right now. Have an opinion right now. Have a reaction right now. And it's like, no, we don't. You don't need to. You don't need to engage in that like super high speed culture. You can just slow down.
That's great. Oh. I love that. Thank you. Jim Jams? What's one thing you're trying to be a little better at?
Yeah, I think that mine is actually kind of similar to Hannah's.
Okay.
So I've had to work on being less of a doormat and being able to advocate for myself more, which I think is an important part of being a good person. Like, you have to be able to stand up for the things that you care about. You have to be able to stand up for yourself.
Yeah.
I feel like I was very unable to do that for a long time. And I'm just starting to get to a place where I am better at it. But I think now, because when I enter any like slightly hostile situation with the mindset of like everyone's going to try and walk all over me, I have to like push back as hard as I can.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I overcompensate.
Yeah.
And then I can come off as a real asshole because I'm just trying to not have everyone be an asshole to me.
Yeah.
So I'm really trying to work on finding that balance of like, where do you need to push and where do you need to just let it go?
Yeah, that's great. I love that. Those are both really good.
Thanks. What's yours?
It's something we've talked about in previous episodes, setting boundaries.
Oh, I love boundaries.
And I'm very good. I'm okay at boundaries when the stakes are low with acquaintances or smaller parts of my life. But with close friends and family and jobs, I'm bad at it for reasons that I am understanding, thanks to my new therapist, who's great.
Yeah.
But part of that is being able to say no more when I need to say no and should, and also asking for what I need when I need something and explaining why it's important that I need that thing instead of just being a people pleaser and going with the flow. I lump that in with boundaries because it feels similar in terms of negotiating my relationships with the people that are important to me and that I spend a lot of time with.
Hmm.
It's hard. But it's getting a little easier.
It is. Boundaries are so hard.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
They make everything better. They make you healthier. They make your relationships healthier. They're very good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so hard to do in the moment. But like, thinking of examples, I'm much better off for having done it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you want to do some advice now?
Yes.
Okay.
I totally want to tell other people what to do. This has been too much introspection.
Maybe is that yours? Podcast, just you two tell people what to do all the time.
Yeah, I love telling people what to do.
Okay, this segment is called
You Ought to Know.
It's a podcast within a podcast where we dole out advice. Hannah likes telling people what to do. Here's some people. Hannah, tell them what to do.
Oh, yeah.
Up first, this is from Dan in New York. Dan says, one family member of mine has a substance use problem and the rest of the family wants to cut him off until he gets clean. I'm not an expert in this area, but I have done a lot of reading about the subject and talked to some close friends, and I feel like cutting him off will only make things worse. I feel like we are ethically obligated to, if not help, at least not make things worse by abandoning him. I'm not sure what to do or what is the more ethical thing, respecting my family's choice and letting them write him off or convincing them otherwise.
Yeah, so I know that that is a thing that a lot of people think, that if there is somebody in your life who has substance abuse issues or serious mental health issues, that the ethical thing to do is to never, ever cut that person off. And I think that's unrealistic. And I think it is unhealthy. I think there are situations in which, for your own safety and well-being, you may have to set up really firm boundaries with somebody. You know, if you've got somebody in your life who you have tried to help them get help and they have relapsed time and time again and it is actively harming you, saying like, I can't be in contact with you anymore, like, it's a thing you're allowed to do. You do not.
Yeah, totally.
You are not obliged to martyr yourself for somebody else because they are sick.
Right. Yeah.
It kind of sounds like the approach your family is taking is not a like, is not that kind of like we're setting a healthy boundary. It's like, oh, we're going to punish you. Like, we're going to emotionally blackmail you
and
into getting better.
And it's not clear that there was the, we're going to try to help first and then set the boundary.
Yeah. So it sounds like it might not be, we need more information, but it sounds like it might not be a very healthy response. And what I would say is you get to make the decision yourself what your relationship's going to be with this family member.
Right.
And you can certainly talk to your family about what they're doing, but you're not the boss of them either.
Jim Jams, rebuttal? Anything to add?
She basically covered everything I was going to say. The main point I wanted to make was that, like, you are able to act independently of your family. If you don't, if they're cutting this person off and you don't think it's right, you do not have to cut them off.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about boundaries. We were just talking about boundaries. Set some boundaries.
Yeah.
Yeah, with this person and with your own family.
And with your own family.
And yeah, we probably don't have enough information here, but if and when you decide to make that call and separate yourself, I feel like the due diligence here is to try to help first. Your first gut reaction shouldn't be, fuck you, you're on your own.
Yeah.
I don't think that's how addiction usually works in my experience.
No, isolating people from their communities is not a good...
No, not at all.
...good treatment for addiction.
Yes.
No, absolutely not.
No. All right. Dan, hope that helps. Been there. Up next, this is Sarah in Toronto. Sarah says, my girlfriend and I moved in together a few months ago, and it has been great in so many ways. We get to spend more time together, we get to help each other out, we get to learn more about each other. But the one thing I struggle with is her binge watching of TV shows. I admit that I love watching TV. I do so a couple nights a week, and there are a number of shows I try to keep up with. But my girlfriend will spend hours and hours in front of the TV, often rewatching things she's already seen multiple times. I worry that this technology is manipulating us and distracting us from other things in life that are important. Is binge watching bad? How much is too much, or am I just overreacting?
I think binge watching could become a problem if it is super excessive, but I feel like we also all binge watch to an extent, and it's also probably fine.
But just because we all do something doesn't mean that something's good or
okay. That's true. I think that this situation calls for another boundary. You need to set a boundary. How much TV per day is fine? And if you're worried that you're not doing enough stuff together, then that's another thing that you need to establish. Like, we're going to have date nights, or so many times per week we like go somewhere.
That's a really great framing, because it's like, I think we sometimes have a tendency to focus on the negative, like, you're doing too much of this thing and I don't like it. Versus if you reframe as like, I wish we were doing more of this other thing. Can we make a commitment to go out and do something twice a week?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's great. I like that.
But yeah, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, but don't just start slamming your girlfriend for watching too much TV, because that is not going to be helpful at all.
No, it sure isn't. I'm reminded of, the book is called How to Do Nothing, and it is by Jenny Odell.
All right.
And a point that she makes, the subtitle of the book is Resisting the Attention Economy. Yeah. And she's talking about how we don't know how to do nothing anymore. We are all constantly stimulated. And she makes the point that you can't tell people to spend less time on their phones, less time on the internet, less time watching TV, if you don't offer them something to replace that with. So she's like, you need to get a hobby that is not about your phone. So her example is getting super into bird watching.
Cool.
Yeah. So it's like, you've got to replace the behavior that you don't like with another thing. If it's just taking something away, then it's like, cool, I'll turn off the TV and I'll sit here and stare at the wall.
I mean, it is built to manipulate us, though. It's hard to get out of that. They just autoplay. The apps are made to get us addicted to them. It's hard to not do that.
Can you turn off autoplay? Maybe that would be my advice. Turn off autoplay.
Can you turn off autoplay?
That is my question and my advice.
Figure out whether or not you can turn off autoplay.
And if you can't, Netflix, add an option to turn off autoplay.
Hey, Netflix, we're coming for you next.
Yeah, watch it. Final advice. This is from Drew in Ottawa. Drew says, I work at a hip independent coffee shop. Brag.
Yeah.
That features, among other things, a record player as our sound system. The staff all take turns choosing music from the collection, and my one coworker only ever picks Michael Jackson records. I don't mind hearing the same songs that frequently, but I do have a problem with artists who have done bad or immoral things outside of their music. As much as I try to avoid artists like R. Kelly and Woody Allen and Michael Jackson, my coworker says I should separate the artist from the art. But is that even possible? More importantly, should we even try when they have done such bad things? What do I do?
I think we've talked about this already. Like, one person doing a bad thing doesn't mean that we should now remove that person from society and forget they exist. And I think that that kind of applies here. Like, Michael Jackson has done bad things, but he's still a person. He's still a musical artist.
He was
a musical artist. And I don't think that, like, his actions can discredit all of the work that he did in his life.
Yeah, I think this is a legitimately complex topic that doesn't have a really clear answer.
Ooh, actually, I have a clear answer.
With this. No, people grapple with this a lot. My personal choice, which I uphold in how I consume media, is that I will not support or spend money on media that is actively going to give money to people who I think suck. Because I don't want to give people who I think suck money.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's fair.
So I'm not going to Woody Allen movies because Woody Allen sucks and he's a living director who is still getting lots of money to make shitty movies that are mostly about other men who are like him who also suck. Michael Jackson is dead. So it's a different category for me. Like, it really, there's a difference between living artists and dead artists in that sense for me. And a lot of it has to do with, like, who am I actually supporting? But that I also recognize is, like, that is where I have personally chosen to come down on what I think is a legitimately complex topic. And I think you get to decide for, like, that's it. You each get to choose to play a record. So, like, you make your ethical choices when you're playing your record, but you don't get to make those choices for everybody.
That was going to be my definitive answer, was that it's not your turn to play records, so it doesn't matter. It's not your choice. So
Wait your turn.
Exactly. Like, I understand the concern here. I think I agree with what Hannah says about, like, dead artists being in a different category than living artists. I really don't know how I feel about living artists in this situation. But ultimately, it's your coworker's turn to choose their music.
Turn to chers.
So let them choose and just suck it up.
Yeah, you do you, Drew. You don't have to separate the artist from the art if you don't want to. You can make those choices when it's your turn at the record player.
You do, Drew.
I've had this conversation with friends multiple times a lot. It is very controversial. It's complicated. It's complex. We never end up at the same place. PYT is a great fucking jam, but I haven't been playing a lot of MJ the past couple years.
What's PYT?
It's a song on the B-side of Thriller. It's a great song. We're out of advice.
That's it. You've
been told what to do. Now do it.
Everybody do it.
You ought to know. Now you know.
Oh.
And that's the end.
No.
And now we're at the final segment that we do.
No.
That's Hannah's life buzzer whenever she needs to buzz it. No.
You live, you learn, you laugh, you learn, you cry, you learn, you lose, you learn.
final segment, my favorite segment, is a little ditty that we like to call You Learn, in which Hannah and our guest offer one treat, one little piece of wisdom, one thing that you can bring into your life that will maybe make you a little bit of a better person. I've got some great advice and some great ideas, and I've tried a lot of the stuff that's come up on this segment so far, and I love all of them. And this time, we're going to start with the guest, Jim Jams. What would you like to offer? What is your gift this episode?
I have two pieces of advice. Can I give two pieces of advice?
I will allow it.
Okay. The first one, I feel like maybe probably lots of people have said this in the past, but I'm just going to say it again. I think that we should stop following influencers on social media.
Oh, fuck influencers, my God.
Like, we are giving so much power and money to people who are just actively and intentionally lying to us to make us feel bad. And I don't like it. I think it's bad.
He don't like it, people.
He think it bad.
It bad.
Great. Perfect.
So yeah, that's it.
All right.
My second piece of advice is listen to Nicole Byer's podcast called Why Won't You Date Me?
Why?
Because Nicole Byer, if you're not familiar with her, she is an actor, a comedian. She's the host of show Nailed It on Netflix, but I feel like that does not do enough to like show you who she truly is. She has this podcast. She talks about dating. She talks about why she's still single. She has a different, really wonderful celebrity guest on each episode. And listening to her, I've been listening to this for the past 6-ish months, and it has been really helping me deal with times that are very difficult where I feel terrible. Like, I'm able to put it on and I just find her so uplifting. Like, she's just so wonderful. She's so funny. She has such a great outlook on everything. And she's so open when she talks about her life. It makes you feel like you feel really connected to her. And I feel like this is something that she talks about on her podcast, how she's like, people feel too connected to me and they think they know me.
My God, I love when she talks about that. She's like, I'm like a clown person. When I walk around in the street, everybody's like, look at that clown person. She's my friend now.
Yeah, exactly. And you will feel like that. You'll listen to her podcast and you'll feel like you have a friend.
Nicole Byer is like a shot of serotonin straight to your brain. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No.
Those were great. Thank you, Jim Jams.
You're welcome.
Hannah?
Okay, I also have a media recommendation.
All right, give it up.
I am going to recommend that everybody go and watch Steven Universe, the movie.
Oh.
Released just last week. It is the conclusion to the long-running and incredibly good animated series, Steven Universe. And the movie does a really good job of being standalone. It was made so that you could watch it without necessarily having seen the rest of the series. But if you have seen the rest of the series, it will also provide a really satisfying conclusion to it. And it is as much of Steven Universe was. It is about mental health. And it is in particular about this villain who has experienced a legitimate and heartrending trauma and has responded to that trauma by becoming a fundamentally toxic person who lives only to hurt other people. And the movie does such an incredible job. Rebecca Sugar is so good at this. It does such an incredible job of showing at once how unacceptable that is and also how understandable it is. And it's such a hard thing to grapple with when either we ourselves or people in our lives have experienced trauma that is manifesting as really hurtful behavior. And it can feel like either we use the trauma as an excuse, like, well, it's not their fault, they had this terrible thing happen to them, or saying that that's inexcusable feels like it's invalidating the trauma. And the story does such an incredibly good job of showing you that, like, both those things can be true at the same time. That it can be really true that what happened to you was absolutely unforgivable and terrible, and also that you don't get to use that as an excuse to hurt other people.
Yeah.
It's so well done. It's so beautiful. I've been listening to the soundtrack on repeat for the past week. It's absolutely incredible. She collaborated with a ton of her favorite musicians on making the soundtrack. So it's like one of the songs is she produced with Chance the Rapper. She co-wrote one song with Lisa Loeb. Like, awesome. It's absolutely incredible. Beautiful animation. Great story. A+. Steven Universe, the movie.
All right.
Wow.
You've heard it here first, folks.
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 Monk.
I'm so glad this podcast is done. This has been me getting ridiculed by 12 of my friends for months. And
months.
God, fuck. It's over. We're done. Goodbye. This is the end.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for coming out. We're glad you're on our team.
Come back next season.
Thanks to Jam Jams for coming back. Thanks to Shoutoutoutoutout for letting us use our theme song, Bad Choices. It's from their album, Reintegration Time. Go check it out. Also, if you have an ethical conundrum and want Hannah and one of our guests to tell you what to do, send an email to help@badchoices.ca. Then, go over, rate, and review. You know the deal. That's it. See you later. Until then, you know what to do.
Make good choices! Yay, what a great podcast. What?
2 seconds later, forgets the microphone. Oh, what's happening? Where am I? What have I been doing? Hannah's been in a fugue state. I have been.